I started at 7 a.m.
Oh. Yeah, I'm an early riser myself. I understand.
Well, see, I'm in Pacific Daylight Time. So I scheduled an entire day for myself. 13 hours.
Oh, my.
Your channel went off without a hitch yesterday, but yeah, hey, we rescheduled it. It's on the calendar. It's been updated. That one went off. He got his power back about 5 minutes before it started.
Yeah.
I might not have seen you. The problem is having a huge hit on things. And so I'm not always getting as many, all of them to see. I also have to run this on multiple machines. So I'm turning and sometimes I might move my mouse ever so slightly and hit the wrong button.
Hmm. I think I'll wait for a few more to pile in.
That was recorded in June. I was actually supposed to be in the backup band and I could not make it. But no, we record a lot of the main stage stuff was pre-recorded at first weekend of June.
I think I'm going to wait for a few more to pile in, just to, before we get started. So. That way we can start right at 2. All right, well, we've just hit 2, so I think this would be a great time for me to start. So, hello. Hi, Anthrocon. So, I'm going to be presenting for a little bit over a PowerPoint, which I know, yes, very enthralling. Thank you. I'm basically going to be talking to you for a little bit, and then, of course, we're going to be open for questions and conversation afterwards. But I believe at least most of you are here were curious about the one singular question that's kind of crossed your mind that you wanted to be a voice actor. Yeah, and I'm going to give you some do's and don'ts for beginners and things like that. So a bit about myself. I'm Hawthorne. I've been doing voice acting for about 5 years, both training and working in a freelance capacity. I've got 2 more credits to go before I actually finish my acting degree at my college, and I'm a Pisces for anyone who cares. Lord knows I don't. So a few of my credits are also listed here as well. Feel free to give those a look. Now, some of these you might not recognize, or actually probably a fair amount of them you might not recognize, but that's kind of par for the course starting out. You're going to find work that is done by independents and stuff like that. Or you might even find work working with students at a college. And these are all video games that I helped fellow college students with outside of my own personal class time. So who is this panel particularly for? For those of you, of course, who want to be prospective voice actors, who are unsure, you know, and see if this something is right for you, and curious, and, you know, see if people, you know, fit this kind of thing. And spoiler alert, if you're here, you probably already is. So we're going to cover, is this right for you? Some pitfalls of an early practitioner, where to start, and finding your voice, and additional reading. Woo! Books! Literature is very important. So I hear a lot of excuses, especially when I mention voice acting to a lot of people. The fact that I'm a voice actor and stuff like that is like, I hear like, oh, I want to be a voice actor, but like, I don't have the range, or my voice sounds weird, or I'm monotone, or some folks say like, oh, I think I'm a bit old for this. I should have done it sooner. Some folks think they're not good at impressions, which we'll get to that in a second. And there's some folks who say they can't compete, and some folks say that like they have a disability that would complicate things. So for folks who don't have range, you don't really need it. Of course, you know, range comes with practice and time, but you don't really need wide range. You just need your voice. You need to understand what your voice is and what you can do with it. And range will come with time, but you don't need range to get started. So if your voice sounds weird, that's great. Use it. It's really good for character work. Like, you know, you got your Invader Zims, your Louise Belchers, all of those voice actors, like, they have like naturally quote unquote weird voices, and they've used it to their advantage. And, you know, again, it goes back into understanding what your voice is capable of and what you can do with it. So folks who are monotone, and I use this picture of Ice Bear specifically, because it's fine. It's great for comedy. It's great for stoicism and things like that. And again, range comes with time, money, and practice. Too old. You're never too old. Jim Cummings is 68. Paul Eading is 64. Julie Kavner, 70 years old. Catherine Beaumont, 82. And Morgan Freeman. Let's not forget Morgan Freeman, the voice of Planet Earth himself, is 84 years old. It's spectacular. And I'll get an impressions. Ooh, we're going to have a later segment on this one. And it's something that, you know, a lot of people actually fall into. It's like, oh, I'm not really good at impressions. I can't do certain things. It's like, you really don't have to have impressions in your belt. Like, it can help when building a character and having a reference for building character. But you don't need to be good at them. And you don't think you can compete. Well, voice acting, and furthermore, acting in general, it's not a competition. It's like saying, like, in art, you're not competing with other artists. You're basically just really competing with yourself to improve. It's all about a positive growth mindset in learning. And competition, it can help some, but it's not so great with others. I have a disability. Lexi Cowden, a silent voice, which is a very, very powerful anime about a deaf main character. The voice actress herself is also deaf. Fairly Odd Parents, Diane Kwan, legally blind. Samuel L. Jackson, various roles. He had a stutter. He went and got coaching for that. He went and saw a vocal therapist for that, and he overcame his stutter. And of course, the way he overcame his stutter is lots and lots of swearing. And me, I've done a few roles myself, both in acting, in theater, and of course voice acting, like I've said before, and I'm legally blind, and I've had my own sort of issues adapting to kind of that thing. So some pitfalls for a new practitioner, and you know, I'm listed some of these because I sort of fell into that trap a bit myself. One, you want to get expensive gear so you can sound the best. You don't really need expensive gear. There's certainly like tiers to it, and it's something that you find through investigation. But naturally speaking, like, you want to find what equipment can make your voice sound just good. You don't need to get like a Neumann or like just like a $2,000-$3,000 microphone. Like, you don't really need it. And it's good to also like seek for consultation and learn about your tech itself. And learn how to EQ and balance and compression. Like, all of this stuff is important. But when it comes to like looking at stuff and looking for what you want to do and things like that, and then looking at equipment and then thinking, you know, that $1,000 like interface looks great. But then there's also like $500 interfaces and $200 interfaces that might, you know, help you out more with where you're at and what you want to do. And I'm really good at impressions. That's great. But they're not going to get you work. At least not most of the time. You'll find yourself getting more into fan projects with impressions and stuff like that. And they're a great base for starting your character voices. Like, say, for instance, if you took Kermit the Frog, and then, you know, you sort of added a bit of a twinge onto it, and then you added a bit of a stutter, you have a different voice. And it's good to have kind of this stuff listed for yourself, but also build upon it. Because a lot of the time, like, for instance, Brock Baker, guy of like 100 voices, very good at impressions. But a lot of the time, when it comes to acting and getting roles, it's just his regular voice. So you need to do better than X and Y, or you're just not good enough. Well, okay, so in an audition, you're stepping into the booth with your sides and all of that, and you're going for this audition for a character, and you just want to go for it. That's great. When you're in the booth, you're doing your best. All they want in that booth, and that casting director across the way, and that audio engineer, and probably those other few executives that are supposed to be in the room that probably don't really, you know, contribute much except just listening in, they want you to be great so that they know that they have the person they want, and that they get to, you know, go home and stuff like that. That's what they want. Nobody wants you to fail. So you don't actually have to strive to be better than another person. You just need to work on your own talent, your own skill set, and your own instrument, because your voice is an instrument. So you need to work on improving yourself, not looking at what other people are doing. Just work on yourself. And, you know, thinking voice acting is easy. It's not easy. Oh, dear Lord, I know for a fact it's not easy. Jeez. It's hard work. It's a lot of hard work. You have to prep your character circumstances, studying your script and stuff like that. And you're constantly learning, you're constantly practicing, you're constantly doing new things. And, like, for instance, this is my first ever panel, and this is my first ever Anthrocon. There's a lot of firsts going on here. And I would be lying if I said I wasn't, you know, scared. So where do you want to start? And it's different for everybody, because like, some folks will have backgrounds in traditional acting and theater. Folks are going to have backgrounds in taking vocal classes. Folks are going to have backgrounds like selling cars and stuff like that. But you want to know what qualities your voice has. Oh, didn't mean to do that. You want to know what qualities your voice has. You want to know, like, is my voice warm? Is my voice raspy?
Am I naturally high-pitched?
or like, do I have a bit of a vocal fry at the bottom of my voice? It's good to know these qualities, because they are your, like, these are your bread and butter. These are your assets. You kind of got to look at what qualities of your voice are natural from your voice, on just how you speak, or what's put onto you from society. For instance, the Valley Girl, that's the, at least part of the terminology that we use. The Valley Girl, which is the one who's like, I don't know why, but everything I say is a question, and you're going to have to accept that. That's Valley Girl. That's an inflection that's like put onto you socially. It's like, oh, people like it when I talk like, meh. It's about kind of finding what parts of your voice that are put onto you and just kind of separating from that and learning how to just control from your base. Because that aspect of your voice that you've separated off, you can help. That can help with, you know, acting in the future. If a role calls for a Valley Girl, that's in your wheelhouse now. That's great. And, you know, you also need to treat your voice well. You know, drink tea, like, make sure your voice is properly warmed up before you start auditioning and stuff like that. And, you know, just don't be a jerk to your throat. Like, if you want to do metal stuff and you want to, like, go low and gravelly, learn how to do that properly. Because if you don't, you might throw yourself, like, you might throw your voice out and it's going to be bad. Because if you overstrain your voice, that can lead to a lot of issues in the future. Reading and learning is very important, especially when it comes to understanding your voice, at least mechanically speaking. And learning the art of acting in and of itself is only going to be an asset to you. Starting out, you're going to look at, you know, roles and stuff like that, and you're going to try to figure out how to get into character. And yeah, some folks can just kind of intuit it. But, you know, if you don't know acting, it's going to be a little bit more difficult. But thankfully, there are books and things for that. And researching communities. Communities are super important for any creator, any artist, anybody who wants to put their creativity out there. Researching communities that are going to help you grow, that are going to help you excel as an artist, as a creator. Those are super important. And a few of them that I highly recommend are ones that are not pay to play. Like, I can't stress this enough. A lot of folks, when they start out, they want to go to places like Voices 123. And for some people, it works out. Some people, it doesn't. But the thing is that you're paying a certain amount of money to be a part of these communities. And then you're probably like maybe paying extra for certain classes and things like that. And you really don't have to do that. There's places like Casting Call Club and Voice Actors Club. They're very, very great, like, places to start. So finding your voice. Oh, man, this is difficult. So we've talked about finding your sound. We've talked about separating some of the social stuff that's off of your, like, that's put onto you by, like, folks who talk to you and, like, oh, they like it better when you do this, they like it better when you do that, or they like it better when you, from my own personal experience, they like it better when you shut up. So basically it's separating all of that gunk off and, you know, finding your core. But also you have to listen closely, and you really have to listen. You have to get used to hearing your own voice. You don't have to like it, but you got to be able to bear through it and gently pick apart parts of your voice. And this is most important. Don't be deprecating when you're listening back to your own voice. Never be deprecating. Always look for growth. Because if you start getting deprecating, you'll start to have doubts and stuff like that. And it's just not good for you trying to grow. So, like, listen to how deep or high your voice is. Listen to, like, if your voice has, like, a weird two-tone thing going on about it. Because, you know, some throat conditions make it so that your voice has some, like, strange harmonic thing going on up and down. Figure out your stutter, figure out some mannerisms and things like that. Write that stuff down because it helps you, especially when it comes to wanting to do narration or wanting to, you know, do just general voiceover, because voiceover and voice acting are very different. Voiceover, you're talking about your narration, your commercial work, and things like that. Voice acting, you're talking about building a character. You're talking about altering your voice to fit a character. And they're two very different things, but they're also so very closely linked. Some book recommendations. Now, these are actually some books that I read both in and out of college. So the voice book, this one is a big help. It even comes with a little CD with little exercises that you can get, and you can perform before you do work and stuff like that. But this, of all books, will help you out with your posture. It will help you understanding where your resonances are, like, and your resonators. This will help you just mechanically with your own voice. I could not recommend this book enough. The Acting Bible by Michael Powell is a culmination of a lot of both anecdotal stuff as well as experiences and things about that, like that, about acting in general, which can provide a lot of advice and insight both inside and outside the industry, learning and performing. The Power of the Actor by Ivana Chubbuck. This is actually a method of acting. I recommend it because she basically combines a bit of Meisner, which is a big fancy word in the acting industry that basically says this is a strong method of acting that connects you to your core as a person and lets you bring that out. And a bit of Chekhov. But it's a very good book that comes to like the mechanics of acting. And the Actor's Survival Kit. Now, this is the book that will talk to you about, you know, when is the right time to find an agent? How do I get started? I'm basically an entrepreneur at this point. So what are some of the things that I need to know about trying to market myself to other people and things like that? Like, this book is basically the practical guide on not just acting, but being a voice actor in general. Like, again, getting an agent. When is the right time to start going out there? Like, being mentally mindful of yourself before you go and audition. So this is basically the near end of my presentation, but I want to give some shout outs to some folks who actually helped me out in culminating this presentation together, because again, art, acting, and by extension voice acting, they're all a collaborative effort. So I want to give a big shout out to Dogger and Mike Feedback, because these two helped me out with listening to my presentation, giving me feedback on it, as well as also giving me some anecdotes to go off of as well. And I could not have done this without them, and I highly appreciate what they did. And of course, I had to plug my own social media there as well. There's my Twitter and my Twitch right there if anybody's interested. So, thank you. It's question time. This is my favorite part.
Star power? Star power?
That is actually a good point. It was something that I was hoping somebody would bring up, is that yes, especially in animated movies and things like that, there are a lot of big names in them. And that's sort of in a way to be expected, because they are big studios. Like Disney's operating out of Hollywood. They've got all these actors kind of like coming in, coming out and stuff like that. Like they're going to have that kind of available. Thankfully, at least for voice acting and acting, there's still a lot of independent projects around. You just got to find them, which is the hard part. I believe last year, we had the voice actors, or you guys had the voice actors for both Lugosi and Jack. So you had Ben Diskin and Jonah Scott. I hope I got that name right. You had Ben Diskin and Jonah Scott, which is great. I think I actually saw the Q&A of at least with Ben Diskin. So that was a lot of fun to watch for me.
I have a question about the sound of the room that you're working in. How would you cut down echo and stuff like that if you're working in a home office or something like that?
So when working in like home offices and stuff like that, there's actually pretty cheap ways on how to make a good soundproofing booth. You can get comforters and tarps. And you get some PVC and you make a makeshift like 1 meter by 1 meter by like however tall you are plus and then some frame out of PVC. And you kind of just drape those over and clip those on. And that can be a pretty decent sound isolation booth right there. In some cases, I have literally auditioned and gotten work by putting a blanket over me and the microphone. And that's got me work.
Mind if I cut in with my solution? It is a little expensive. I've got a walk-in closet that's about 6 feet square, and I put my fursuit on the door and close the door.
That's very.
I do also hang a blanket. So I got some PVC pipe, and I took one of the blankets that I already have, a quilt, and that blocks the ceiling. So yeah.
So, I guess to further answer your question. You're wearing your most expensive soundproofing right now.
No, I'm not.
No. The person who asked.
Oh, okay.
You're like.
That sounds like that would make for a very, very sweaty day of acting. But hey, you know what? If those are something I would have to check out myself. Absolutely.
I have a question.
All right, go ahead.
How do you get yourself out there, like, as a voice actor to get, like, in a thing?
Well, so there's a few places. Like I said, there's Casting Call Club, which does, they do post jobs that are both independent, and there's also jobs that some are from other corporations and things like that. So you will find paid and unpaid jobs there. It's not a bad place to start, but ultimately as well, a really good way to just get yourself out there is making your own content. And even if that's like doing readings from Reddit that some people do, like for Dungeons and Dragons, I've seen people do like text reads of Dungeons and Dragons, and that's how they display their voice. And there are some that like write and read audiobooks, and that's how they make their own voice go out. But essentially getting your voice out there, there's a lot of things you can do. Podcasts, again, creating your own content, finding work on places like Casting Call Club and other sources that post casting calls. Social media is actually a big one. And I know it's usually for the older crowd, but there's plenty of actual groups on Facebook that use and look for casting in that way.
Can I chime in for a second here?
Yep.
Yeah, can you hear me okay, by the way?
Yep.
Okay, just want to make sure. My mic's a little faulty here sometimes. So when you talk about creating content, me and some friends used to do like some voice acting just for fun on YouTube. Like we would do like fan dubs of our favorite cartoons and stuff. Sometimes we would do some original content and everything. So when you create content, I mean, is there a way of sort of marketing it to, you know, people that might be looking for voice actors? I mean, if you go to places like you're talking about, like casting calls, can you kind of just be like, hey, here's my YouTube page, here's my Facebook page, or something like that?
There are times where folks who are looking for voice talent will actually go to your individual profile page and they can see stuff like that. But for your like original content, and you have like a bunch of that stuff just kind of backed up, take the stuff that you're genuinely proud of and things like that, and pick which ones show off your range the best and kind of put them together into a 30-second to minute long demo reel. And once you have that, you can work on like you can put it on a resume. Like if you've worked on your own projects, you can put that on a resume and you can submit that off to an agency.
Okay, good to know. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
No problem.
As silly as it sounds, TikTok could probably be used as to help you get into voice acting as well.
I think somebody was talking in your background. Could you please say that again? Yeah.
As silly as it sounds, could TikTok possibly be used to get into voice acting?
You know what? As much as like there are some folks who would like boohoo on the platform as TikTok, I think so, absolutely. If you're putting out your voice and those are like clips that you have and you want to use them, absolutely, go right ahead. Take those clips, put them into a reel, either audio or visual, like, and go for it. Like, anything you use your voice for is material for you to put onto a demo.
Thank you.
Oh, totally. I couldn't agree more. Like I'm it's different for every area, depending on when stuff's going to open up, because you know of the big COVID that's going around. But you know, finding local theater and other chances to act, and you know, like meeting people, it's great. Like, find opportunities to use your voice, and yeah, that's nothing but an asset. Yeah. And actually, to touch on that, improv is a very useful skill for voice actors, because there are times, and these opportunities are far and few between, but they are very important opportunities. There are times when ad-libbing can actually get you the job. And there's few examples of that, but like you can like if it's like you're on like your second take of your audition or like something else on your self-tape, and you're like, you know what, I think we got it in the first two takes before I submit this, so for the third take I'm just gonna ad lib. That can get you the job. Of course, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot at that point. You have to figure out like what the person's like on the other end to see if that would work out for you. But it is a very important skill for ad lib.
Hello, can I ask a question?
Go right ahead.
I just want to say thank you for your presentation. I am a college student, and I am currently in animation. And I would like to ask a question regarding microphones, because, you know, college students being broke. And I would like to ask, how do I turn my cell phone into, you know, a reliable microphone? Thank you.
Well, that's a difficult question to answer, because like in terms of being broke and stuff like that, but I do have a good anecdote for that one. There exist microphones that are just basically little shotgun microphones that I think that'll probably cost you around, I want to say, roughly 40 to 60, that you could just stick on the bottom of your cell phone. It's a shotgun mic, and just like hold that at a distance and talk into it. It's going to provide better quality than just like your regular cell phone. And my voice acting teacher, whose name is Christian Potenza, he used to be my voice acting coach anyway. I'm until college is over. And then of course I will seek other methods of learning. But what he did is that sometimes he sat in his car, he had that little attachment, stuck it onto his phone, and auditioned from it. And he actually has gotten work using that kind of thing. So you can actually find relatively affordable attachments for your smartphone. And it should, you know, it will sound better than just your regular phone.
If I could cut in again, I've got a Zoom H2N. At the time, it cost me, I think, like $85. So this is not Zoom that we're used to right now, that we're using now. There's a microphone company, Zoom. The thing is that I had two criteria. Yes, I want a good mic, but I need dead air. This thing, you put an SD card into it, and then I take it into the closet that I just told you about before, and do a voiceover, and it works. I get pretty good. I get pretty much dead air over there. Again, $85, and they specialize in mics that just you take them with you and you just start recording. They'll also save you a lot of hassle as far as buying other wires or other equipment or sound outs or something. It's just a standalone mic. It does cardioid really well. Again, that's specific to the voiceover. Look into Zoom. I think they have a cheaper mic than this. Really good solution.
Yep. Another good place, again, if you have the privilege of owning one, because again, I'm legally blind. I am incapable of driving. If you have access to a car, be it your car, your friend's car, a car, cars are very good sound booths. Surprisingly enough, because it's on the inside, the interior is usually very rounded. It's usually fuzzy with the upholstery, and it's one hell of a sound blocker. So I also highly recommend, like, if you have to, use your car. That's great. Actually, that does touch back on the point of, like, you don't need expensive equipment to get started in voice acting. You don't have to buy yourself a full studio. Find what works for you and use it. It's great.
Don't buy from the top three searches in Google.
Oh yeah, that too.
Hello, can I ask another question?
Go ahead.
All right. Would you say that Audacity is, you know, a viable long-term app for voice acting?
I think in that case, it depends on what you want to do. If you're going, like, if you're doing voice acting, you're doing, like, the full production at home, you might want to look into something that might do more in terms of, like, you know, actual audio editing, like full scope audio editing, like effects and like room stuff and all of that. But in terms of, like, you know, submitting, recording, and like doing little touch-ups here and there, like Audacity has worked for like voice actors for years. And especially when submitting, because like when you're done and you export it, like, and exporting it into like a very large WAV file, it's very high quality still. Audacity is great, especially because it's free.
Yeah, I've used that myself. Again, I'm mostly voice over, and the post processing that I do is saved. So all I have to do is edit out my mistakes first. And then, well, I had to work on my post-processor for a day or so, demud my voice or so. But then after that, I've got the speed. It's for other things like mixing. Yeah, it's really easy to mix in sounds, fade in, fade out, and everything.
That's a very good question. And the answer is, it depends on the actor. For me, I am a very emotive person. I will talk with my hands. Like, if I'm shouting, I might wave my arms above my head. And the microphone, actually, it can pick up the movement of your body in your voice. For instance, like, if somebody was to frown and they were speaking into a microphone and delivering a line that's meant to be happy, you can hear that. There's subtleties in it. Like, if I was to smile, like, you can kind of tell when somebody's, like, voice picks up and you know, comes back down. It's kind of like an ear you have to train, but you can pick up on it. So when it comes to, like, movement and moving yourself, go with what's comfortable. but also don't wear stuff that'll jingle jangle around, because that could be picked up too. It is important to have room to play when you're voice acting. Well, again, that depends. At least for me, like, I've done voice acting both sitting down and standing up. I have no preference either way, although I believe when I stand up, I get better sound, at least from myself. Again, it varies from voice actor to voice actor. Like, if you're able to, like, get what's known as, like, proper alignment, like your shoulders are, you know, properly set, and, like, you have looseness in your diaphragm and all that, and you're able to get, like, projection out, it in a sense does and does not matter. It's an actor to actor thing. You have to experiment. So and of course, the floor is open to anyone who wants to ask a question. I just want to say, you don't have to ask me if you want to ask a question.
You may have covered this before, but are there any special skills that a voice actor has to have that a normal actor does not have or doesn't need to have?
Well, training your ear is one of the most important things a voice actor really needs. Like, when you listen to your voice, you can kind of tell, like, oh, do I sound tense in that? Or do I sound, do I sound way too breathy in that? Listening to your own voice, being able to tolerate listening to it, because guaranteed, I don't think anybody on this earth, unless they've trained, enjoys the sound of their own voice. And I know I still don't. Having the ear is very important, and you get that through practice and listening. But also, kind of, it's strange. It's like puppeteering. And I also would recommend taking up puppeteering, at least to kind of get that idea. Because with regular acting in terms of theater, you kind of have the whole stage to play with. You can show expressions and stuff like that, and you can stage whisper to shout, and you're allowed to be more, like, expressive with your body, because your body is a fair amount of the work itself. And then, you know, of course, with movies, you kind of have the same thing, although, you know, cameras can be closer, you can speak quieter, you know, you don't have to be as, you know, open with your movements. But with voice acting, you have none of that. People can't see the expression on your face. People can't tell that, like, your fingers are trembling as you're about to cry. Like, nobody can actually tell that in your voice. So being able to sort of emote that kind of thing and to draw from that raw place without, you know, drowning in your own emotion, it's also really important for a voice actor. I hope that answered. Yeah. Well, for me, because I can speak for myself, from my own experiences anyway. When I started voice acting, I started learning voice acting first. And then I went to school for acting for film and television. The transition for me, as in terms of, like, flow, I had the emoting ready, but I didn't necessarily have, like, the listening receiving sort of thing going on. So, like, when it comes to voice acting and I'm told how another character is speaking to me and how that person feels, I can go off of that in, like, a sort of quote unquote medical sense. Like, I can analyze that and go off of it. But when it came to acting, and I'm talking face to face acting here, when it came to giving people my energy and receiving that energy back and like replying to it rather than just like saying my next line in a way that I think I should be saying that next line, that's kind of where that difference started. So in a weird way, and I can speak on from my coach's experience, is he learned theater first and he found that voice acting is kind of, and it's not really like shrinking in a reductive sense. It's shrinking like you're taking certain parts of your performance and putting it all towards your voice. So transitioning back and forth, like I would highly recommend acting in physically, like theater or like in videos. And then like you can bring that into voice acting. So transitioning back and forth in terms of acting, I'd say it's medium moderate in terms of difficulty. Also, yes, I'm having difficulty seeing the questions because like it's on one side of my screen and like I have to lean in. Oh, Gabs, you mentioned how to maintain your voice. Warm-ups. I highly recommend warm-ups. The voice book that I mentioned, warm-ups are great. Working on your scales, practicing proper breathing exercises, because breath is very important. You know, making sure that your voice is awake and not super cold when you do an audition or a presentation or whatever and stuff like that is also important. And there are videos and lots of other folks who would gladly help you with like vocal warm-ups. Those are important for maintaining your voice. Also, if you feel as though your voice is being strained or like you feel like a little bit raspy in your throat, if you feel like it's hurting, like if it's physically hurting, stop. Like if it's actually physically hurting, like take a break, stop, have tea with honey in it or ginger and just let your voice rest. Vocal rest is very important. Don't overexert yourself. You're going to have like long-term effects that'll affect you. Other than that, I highly recommend just getting marshmallows. If you're vegan, get vegan marshmallows. The glycerin and the sugar will lubricate your throat. Just suck on marshmallows. That's what my coach did.
How hard would you say it is to carve out a niche for yourself? Something that you're good at? What is a good process for finding that?
Now, carving out your own niche, there's... And it does vary from person to person, again, because every voice is different. But carving out your own niche, a lot of it is, again, analyzing your own voice, figuring out what your voice is good at, and kind of going forward with it. It's something that you kind of encounter when you're trying to act in general. Back in my classes, I actually had a whole class pretty much dedicated to marketing yourself. So we had a little questionnaire of like, are you a type A, B, or C personality? What are the like qualities of your character like on average as like a person? And like we're talking in a severe, like just like character acting sense, not character philosophical, metaphysical sense. And kind of figuring out where your niche is from that. So say like if somebody has like a smooth, raspy voice that's typically stoic, you probably lend yourself more to like playing stoic characters. If you have a range, like a wide range of like goofy and characters like that, like you're more of like a trickster, jokester type person who does voice acting in that regard. So finding your own niche is this weird kind of self journey that you kind of got to take on your own there. But as for finding it yourself, personality quizzes, et cetera, and stuff like that. And again, you know, I'm not a big believer in personality quizzes as defining personality, but it's one hell of a way to figure out what I can do to market myself as a character.
Thank you.
But I also would recommend, like, for starting out, still go for work if you can't find your niche, because you'll find your niche at some point, but always go for, like, always be trying to work, really. You'll find your niche at some point. Growls. I just see that Fast Frog also commented about doing growls and roars. Yeah, throat relaxation is great for that. But also, like, for growls and roars, highly recommend looking up or finding a vocal coach or finding advice for doing metal. And I mean, like, heavy metal and stuff like that. Because when they growl and grunt, it doesn't actually come from their throat. It comes from, like, their chest and diaphragm. And it's really guttural. And I would gladly do it right now, but I've been talking for a while, and it's just not in me at the moment.
Sorry.
Okay, so there was mentions of audiobooks and keeping in character for things like that. So it helps to at least, like, when you're doing audiobooks, like, you're not doing it all in one go. You'll try to do most of it in one go. I can't speak entirely from experience. I can only speak from anecdotal stuff that I've been told in doing audiobooks. But they'll do it, like, page by page by page, and they'll try to have a solid full page of that, and then they'll cut off and go to another recording. So what you want to do, and I advocate anybody doing stuff like this, even if it's not audiobooks, if you're voicing a character, record that character specifically, have that audio file off to the side, so that if you forget how a certain character sounded, you can open that audio file, listen back to it, and then pull that character back on and do another take. Yeah. Voice acrobatics is also very impressive. That's another good skill to learn if you can muscle through it.
Would you say that it's common for work to still be done in major production studios? Or would you say that you're seeing this transition to a voice actor recording their own stuff, sending it in, and do you have preference for either type of work?
Having worked in a freelance capacity, I have seldom set foot in studio. I've done most of my recording from home, but I have spoken with other voice actors who do still do more commercial stuff. And with COVID, and how things have started with that, is that a lot of people who are doing casting and things like that are looking for folks who can do it at home more often than not, at least now. Although with restrictions lifting in some places, I could still potentially see that people are going out to studios and stuff like that. And even then, I see a lot of people self-taping and auditioning from home and then going to a studio to either, you know, record or film, if we're talking acting and voice acting in that regard. So being able to do it from home is an asset, though it is a very expensive asset if you're looking for, like, full studio quality. And we're talking, like, upper studio quality, like you're recording for Disney like you're getting a job for Disney and that kind of studio quality. But like most of the time now, it's going to be self-taping from home and hopefully getting into a studio. But in terms of preference, home is comfortable. Home is, you know, it's of the temperature that I like, but home is also very loud. So, I would prefer a studio if I could make the commute.
Okay. Because I often hear about, how you'll have, different people in the room, your director, producer, casting person, someone to make sure that you're delivering lines in a way that they appreciate. And I assume that typically you don't have that when you're recording from home. Have you been in situations where you have that direct connection with the client, and how has that kind of changed your process?
So pre-COVID, I actually had, at least with all the projects I did with other students, is that we had a studio that actually at my school that I used. And the way that I changed my process is like, yes, I got direct feedback for things like that. And then I've done stuff remotely also for my school. I did ADR for somebody's documentary. And because you know, there was audio issues with one guy, so they just had me dub over. And I sent in a clip of what I could do. They're like, this is great. But there are some issues here. And you know, we ended up getting onto a Discord call, which I guess in terms of the old term of it is phone patch, where they would have somebody go to one studio, say like I live in Canada, so I'll use an example. So they'll have you in a studio in Toronto, patch you all the way to a studio in Florida, and then they would have that audio go through. And it's basically what you have now, except it's through Zoom or any like low latency, you know, phone call for stuff like that. So, but in terms of like going back and forth between myself and another person, and we didn't have that kind of connection, it hasn't really changed my process of things. Although I've had to sort of learn to understand what people mean in text for their direction. So I have literally had somebody be like, hey, could you do that again, except, you know, sound more like a McConaughey type rather than like, you know, whatever you were doing, like Seth MacFarlane, whatever. Could you go more that type? It's like, yeah, okay. And then I kind of go in that ballpark, and they're like, great, awesome. So it's just a difference of direction, not really a difference of method. Also, in terms of the slideshow being available afterwards, I wasn't sure that I didn't know if people actually would want that. So now there's something on the back of my mind. I might make a copy of it. I'm not sure where to post it. I might post it if I'm allowed to post it. I might post it in the Anthrocon Discord. Also, I believe it is 3 p.m. So I believe this is the ending of our time. If anybody wants to ask me further questions, I am on Discord. My PMs are open. I am on the Anthrocon Discord as Hawthorne. It's the only hedgehog on there, I think. So don't be afraid to send me questions. And I'm glad I could actually show all of you what I love to do for a living, and I hope it's inspired some of you to like get started, because that's all you have to do now is you got this information. Might want to you know do more research, whatever. But like, I just want to see all of you get started, because I want to see more furry voice actors. Honestly. But anyway, thank you for this time, and I appreciate you walking out.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.